From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, WUWM General Manager John Hess.
Hello, this is Mark Mone, Chancellor of UW-Milwaukee. I'm here today with John Hess, our new WUWM Director and General Manager. In a turnabout from my usual monthly program, I'm going to be the interviewer for the discussion that we're going to have today. John, first, welcome to WUWM. Welcome to Milwaukee.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you today.
Well, John, you know, it really is great to have you at the station, and especially as our new general manager. You have had a great start, and I want to tell you that there's just been positive interactions across campus, throughout the station and in our community. Many, many positive things have been said, and I've been participating with you in some meetings. I really admire you. I admire your style, your experience. Really a pleasure to have you here. For this interview today, I thought it'd be great to get to know you a little bit, and I very much look forward to our interview. So are you ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, first of all, let's talk a little bit about how did you end up coming to UW-Milwaukee? Tell us about the journey to get here.
Well, I think the journey for me to get here was a kind of a long and winding road. So I have worked in public radio for 20 years. This is my 20th year working in public radio. Before that, I was in commercial media. I had known Dave Edwards. He had come and worked at my station at Boise State and done some work with us on a couple of strategic plans that we had worked on. And Dave and I also served, Dave was on the NPR board while I was the president of Western States Public Radio, and we both would go to NPR on a quarterly basis and meet with the folks there. So I got to know Dave a little bit as well. So when Dave announced his retirement, I was working down in Tucson as the chief operating officer at Arizona Public Media in Tucson, Arizona. And you know, I was really familiar with Dave, his management style, and also what a high caliber station it was at UWM. And when he announced that he was leaving, the first time around, I had been at Tucson for about a year and a half. And when it was announced that he was going to be staying for a little bit longer and they were repeating the search, that's when I became intrigued and decided to throw my hat in the ring. And I think that I've been absolutely, that was the right decision to make, because I think it was, it's a great group of people at WUWM, and it's a great community. Milwaukee is a fantastic community. And I do have a connection to Milwaukee. I grew up a little bit there for about 4 years, from about age 11 to age 15. Went partially to Nicolay High School and River Hills Junior High. And lived in Glendale. And so Milwaukee has changed considerably since the time I was there, but it was always a great town, and it was really great to go back there and kind of get reacquainted with the place.
Well, that's great. Wonderful perspectives. So all paths lead to Dave Edwards sometimes, it seems.
That's right.
Public radio. He's a great legacy for us to have built on with him being here for 41 years. And it's just remarkable how, as you were talking, I think about some of our shared paths. We talked a little bit before the interview today about time in Boise. And then when you talk about Nicolay, you know, that's where both my kids graduated from. So it's neat. So you're coming back home. So in your 20 years in public radio, you must have done some things before that that got you into that. But tell us a little bit about that in terms of what your background is before public radio.
Well, before public radio, I studied at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. I got my degree in broadcasting and film there, and then really started in television as a TV producer and worked in Minneapolis for the first 7 years of my career, and then came back to Iowa City to start their first public access cable operation, and was there for 5 years or so, and then gravitated into newspapers and worked at the Cedar Rapids Gazette, which is the largest family-owned newspaper in Iowa, and was there for 7 years, and then went into public radio and started in development. So I was the development director at KUNI in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Iowa, and they had a very large 1,500 watt signal, or a 50,000 watt signal, 1,500 foot tower, and we covered half the state with that signal. And so was there as a development director for 2 years, and then took over for the GM after that, and then moved on to Boise State. At Boise State Public Radio, I was there for 11 years, and Tucson for two, and then here in Milwaukee.
So you must have started about 2 years old, from the way I put this all together. You know, it's just a pretty amazing career, and you're still a pretty young man. So this is great experience, and, you know, it bodes well for some of the integrative things that we've talked about in terms of some of our recent discussions with our partners at both Milwaukee Area Technical College as well as Milwaukee Public Schools with their radio stations. And of course, they've got the PBS channels at MATC. So we really see some great opportunities there for collaboration. Any thoughts or perspectives to share on that, given your experience and recent discussions?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I've been very fortunate to work in, you know, television, radio, news, and newspapers and really to see a huge change in media over that period of time, from sort of very traditional media that, you know, three broadcast channels or one newspaper. And you've seen this conglomeration and consolidation of media really affect everything over the last, especially 15, 20 years. And when I left newspapers to go into radio at the beginning of this century in 2000, newspapers were at their height. They were absolutely at the absolute height of their influence in communities, and it really was sort of the internet that changed everything with newspapers, and that basic monopoly that they had on the community in terms of advertising and things like that started to go away. So it's been very interesting to see sort of the evolution of media, how media conglomerations and large media companies have sort of taken over markets. And the nice thing I love about public radio, especially with news in public radio, is that it is really one of the few open local sources of media that people can turn to find out what's going on. The great thing about working in collaboration with other media partners is that we all have a role to play to really, what I would call, fill in the picture, the local media picture, that not all of us can do alone anymore. So we have to collaborate, we have to work together. And having worked in all these different media in my career, I can definitely see how they fit together and how sometimes they don't fit together. And so it's interesting to talk about collaboration and to see what projects really we can work on effectively going forward in Milwaukee, just to really to serve the citizens of the community better.
What a healthy perspective, and frankly refreshing in the light of sometimes when you have different entities, they don't always play well together. And I think one of the key points you made is the stories and you know, the issues are so much bigger than what one set of reporters or one particular station from one angle can do. But perhaps by collaborating, we can serve the community better. Yes. Really, really appreciate that, John.
Yeah, I think that's really true, Mark. I think we can, especially with issues like elections and other issues that are big community-wide issues, we're always more effective when we work together in terms of our coverage, as opposed to competing against one another.
Yeah, and we do have some important elections coming up, so we'll have some great tests and wonderful other activities. You know, many of these things I could have segued, of course, over to, you know, the world that we're in today, reflecting the effects of this pandemic. They affect everything from where we can work, as I think about where you're at today in Boise, Idaho, where I'm here in Milwaukee, and others that are listening are going to be, I know, in remote locations as well as they listen to this in the near future. There's a lot of different questions that I could have asked and would have asked about things, but let's just jump right into it. COVID-19 and WWM. First of all, just at the foundational level, how has it affected station operations?
Well, I think what it is it's really meant that, as you mentioned, Al, we've all gone remote. So we've all gone to our home offices or home studios. The nice thing what we've been able to do with WWM is over the last probably 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we've been able to raise additional monies out in the community to buy more remote equipment for our journalists. So now they all have Apple laptops. They have shotgun microphones on fish poles, so they don't have to get too close to their subjects. They have the ability, and you see this in our newsletters, they have the ability to really record voices, record their voices from home, mix their audio, put it into automation from home. And we probably were, you know, we really didn't think along those lines until we absolutely had to work remotely. And I think that's changed a tremendous amount. But I think also what's really changed is our journalists' ability and need to get out in the community, to be able to, during this pandemic, to be able to tell the stories of what's happening in different neighborhoods that aren't necessarily getting represented in regular media. So talking about what's happening in the African-American community, for instance, or talking about that we've just had a recent election in Milwaukee here, and we've elected some groundbreaking leaders from both African-American perspective or Latina perspective, and what they will bring to the city and how they'll reflect the change in the city. And I'm really proud of the journalists we have at WUWM. They are really, really curious people, and they really believe in good public radio and being able to tell a great story. And that's really at the core of what we do, is we're great storytellers.
So this is amazing, just what we've seen in terms of the transformation and how rapidly and quickly and frankly seamlessly WWM has been able to not miss a beat, just continue with local programming and of course continue with the serialized or national types of programs as well that your listeners value and appreciate so much. One thing that's interesting, you talked about the listener support and how people have come together to help you raise funds for some of the specific needs. That is something that strikes me as a really valuable support base for so many things at UWM. It has been such a differentiator for us. I reflect a little bit on the recent campaign, but also the important part that WWM has played in that. Sounds like you've just really hit the ground running on that front as well, John. Maybe tell me a little bit about what you're seeing and what you're hearing from the great supporters that we have in the community.
Well, you know, I've been talking to our advisory board, and that's really where I've been starting in terms of reaching out into the community in terms of raising additional funds. But, you know, what I've heard from people in the community is that everybody really, really values the radio station. They value it in terms of the ability to tell the community about what's going on, to really provide a solid sense of place for when people come to Milwaukee and turn on the radio. They really know that this is the local radio station. And I think that's just been invaluable. Plus, I think also with WWM, we have these specialty reporters. So we're one of the few media that really specialize in, for instance, education or innovation or race and ethnicity or things like that, that we have been able to do through raising money, especially in the community, for these particular positions. And I think that's been very, very valuable because it's enabled our reporters not only to develop a rich base of sources, but really to go more in depth into certain stories and certain issues than what you might find at other media. And I think, you know, examples of like what Susan Bentz does with our reporting on what's going on in the environment. You know, Susan is just finishing up a series on water in terms of water quality here in Milwaukee that she was doing in conjunction with American Public Media. And those kinds of stories are things that, you know, if we were just raising money in general, we probably wouldn't have enough money to do. But since we were raising money specifically for these beats, we were able to really go in depth with these reporters. And I think it's really heightened our coverage and given folks in Milwaukee a different perspective than if they were just to listen to other radio stations throughout the community.
The phrase, as you're talking, much loved comes to mind. You mentioned Susan Bentz, and you referred to a number of other reporters and programs. And I think that is a special treasure that UWM is very fortunate to have affiliation with WWM in terms of the great programming. And you also talked about that, in my words here, kind of the home base, that sense of place that WWM gives to this community in such an important way. I think a phrase that comes to mind also is, if we didn't have it, we'd have to create and invent it, and we begin to probably have the quality and the legacy that we've got here and what you've been able to really enhance already. So we've talked about local issues, talked about partnerships, talked about COVID, talked about a number of other things in terms of how you got here. Let's go bigger and think about, if you will, given your experience, there were some trends. You've described the internet impact on newspapers, and then how radio and TV, some of the evolution there. The trends have to be at least accelerated, but potentially even changed dramatically because of the pandemic. So what do you see as the future as you think about NPR broadcasting more widely? Let's start kind of at that biggest level. What do you think these trends and the immediate issues going on right now portend for the future?
Well, I think we're moving, and this may accelerate us, we may be moving from a broadcast culture to what I would call more listening on digital platforms and people listening on their own schedules. So we've seen this in television quite a bit, where people use Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Plus or whatever it is to watch TV on their own schedules. And they can basically become their own programmers of whatever they want to watch. That has not necessarily always been the case with radio. Radio has been more of a appointment type of listening. And I think for the cases of like Morning Edition and All Things Considered, because you're sitting in your car and usually you don't have access to digital technology because you're moving around, that still is the case. But I think in other places, other ways, listeners are getting our content through their phones, their computers, smart speakers, they're listening through podcasts, they're listening in other ways. And we're starting to see this a little bit. Our last programming report that we had just in March, you know, we see our broadcast signal, our listeners on broadcast kind of staying flat, but we're seeing this huge growth in our digital engagement with listeners, double and sometimes triple the numbers of what we had a year ago. So my guess is there is that many times they don't have radios in their homes anymore, and they might be home working from home, but they don't have radios there. So they're listening through their smart speaker, they're listening through their PC, they're listening through their mobile phone. And that's how they're engaging with us. And I think NPR has really started to look at this as well. Many of their daily programs are starting to be offered on a digital basis. They offer a service called NPR One, which is a sort of a roundup of some of the highlights of news and information that's mixed in with local news and information, and we participate with NPR One as well. And the nice thing as well is that on the digital side, looking at the metrics and seeing who's listening to you is so much easier to acquire, and you can acquire it so much more quickly than having to depend on an audience measurement service like Nielsen. So we can see through Google Analytics how quickly people are adopting a show or a program or even a story that we're running. And that helps to tell us about what our audience's needs are, what their tastes are, and it can help tailor what we do as far as our programming going forward to provide just a better service for the local audience.
This is fascinating, John. I really appreciate that. I think it's smart, it's reflective, it just shows your experience and what you've seen and the acceleration of things that have been going on and now we're in this new world. I may be someday regretting asking this question because I know in a future interview, you may turn it around and ask me a similar question about higher ed. And let me just first of all set the stage by talking about the issue, and you really are referring to it. You've been focusing an awful lot on listeners. And when you talk about this, I think of the word asynchronous. So people don't have to listen at 10 o'clock in the morning anymore just because the show is at 10. It's digitally available. They can listen to it whenever, wherever they want. Wonderful, great from the listener side. But let's turn the tables and think about the suppliers. Let's think about us. for a moment, think about whether you're in higher ed or whether you're in a radio station, as everybody now is in a digital marketplace, as everybody is in a digital audience and listenership world, people have choices. And in those choices, they may say, well, the programming that's available from pick the station, W here or K there, depending if you're east or west of the Mississippi, we've got all these stations. And to your point earlier, we're getting this great aggregation where sometimes you can have certain things that previously, and we don't quite have the technology in all cars today, but a lot of cars are coming Wi-Fi equipped and where you can do the asynchronous. It used to be, you know, in the car, you couldn't have what you had at home because of the computers. But today, cars are increasingly becoming computers on wheels. So here's the question. Arguably, the marketplace is going to become saturated because no longer do I just have these wonderful stations in Milwaukee. I can listen to Chicago, San Francisco, heck, for that matter, Tokyo, Berlin, wherever I want. How do you see the future in a very crowded place for WWM to continue to be differentiated, to continue to have the brand, and really the types of support that we've so long had and continue to flourish in that so-called crowded marketplace?
Well, I think it really comes down to one single factor, and that's storytelling. The ability of our journalists to tell a story in a unique way that no one else can. We have an advantage because as media has become more diffused and conglomerated, localism has gone away. So the more we can tell a great story and a great local story that no one else is telling, that separates us, differentiates us from our competitors. But it really comes down to storytelling. So having the ability of great journalists on our staff who feel supported in their work and have the time and the attention and the support to tell great stories is really where we will differentiate ourselves. And if we keep that in the forefront of our mission of the organization, we'll be served well no matter what, wherever the technology takes us. So, and that's what I think that we need to keep doing. We also have to let people know where we are. So, we have to promote our services, both on the broadcast platform and also on the digital platform, so people know that they can reach us and it's easy for them to get to us. But once they reach us and get to us, then it's really going to be the content and the quality of our journalism that's going to keep people coming back to us on a regular basis. And that's what I think we need to be continue to be focused on.
I really like that perspective. You know, like you, I'm originally from the West Coast, and not that you're originally from the West Coast, but you've spent a lot of time there. Milwaukee is looked at very differently depending on where you're at in the world. And I think this city has come into its own in such a powerful way. If you think about what the DNC, as we look ahead, is going to do and has been doing, if you think about many of the issues that are renaissance factors for the city in terms of the growth economically, politically, from a sports side, from the restaurant scene to the cultural aspects in terms of art, music, symphony, name it. And we really today are a city that's come into our own in powerful ways. The reason I mention that is that when you talk about stories, I think issues that are of significance, whether they're around how do we deal with the segregation, how do we deal with economic equality and inequalities, the education challenges that happen, whether it's in K-12 or completion of higher ed, some of the issues around talent, and certainly as we look ahead to the future, post-COVID, or if that's the right word, through COVID, is there a word that's kind of pan-pandemic as we go through this together? So I think you're right on in terms of how we tell those stories are going to have general lessons, generalizable lessons and learnings for people around the world to understand what's happening in Milwaukee, how we deal with a lot of the issues. So, one of the things that I said at the outset is we want to get to know you. And I know our time is running down. John, tell me a little bit about your family, if you would, please.
Oh, okay. I am one of five kids, and I have four sisters. I am the fourth of the five, so I learned to I learned to respect early on, let's put it that way. I grew up on the East Coast, and then I was born in New York State, right outside New York City. And as I said, we moved to Milwaukee, and then I finished up my high school days right outside Chicago in Batavia, Illinois, right near Aurora, Illinois, and then went to the University of Iowa. And then my wife, Michelle, and I met in college, and we were in the Midwest for 25 years before we moved to Boise. So moved to the West. And I think we kind of saw those mountains, and we kind of fell in love with them as being Midwestern kids. That's kind of how I've ended up here. But my dad was an editor, a publisher. He was a graduate of the University of Iowa Writers Workshop. So media is sort of in my blood. His were books, and his were was fiction, but mine was definitely journalism. So I think that's kind of how that line of linear line has kind of come through both him and me to where we are now.
That's really great. Tell me, in the last month or so, what have been some of the fun and cool things that you've done?
Fun and cool things. I'm just grateful I have a job. I'm grateful to come in and work every day. Actually, it keeps me focused on what's going on. So, but I have, really enjoyed some great TV things. One of the things I love is Jim Gaffigan and his family have a dinner with the Gaffigans every day at 6 o'clock my time, 4 o'clock live on YouTube, that we have watched every day, I think, for the entire month. So we've got to know Jim and his entire 5 kids and his wife, and watch them while they have dinner. And then they raise money for first responders and for the healthcare community in New York City. And that's how they do it. And I think they've raised over $60,000 so far, just to provide meals for the healthcare community in New York City. So it's just a fun thing that we do at our dinner table while we're watching them eat their dinner.
That's really neat. And I agree, employment security is a wonderful thing to have. And we're especially happy that you're employed securely here at UW-Milwaukee in the WWM general manager position. Let me just wrap up here by saying thank you, John, for joining us today. Welcome to Milwaukee. Welcome to the show. We look forward to a great career with you here. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for your support. And once again, John, thanks.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Monet, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you'd like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.